The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
For the past 2 days, EU leaders have been in Denmark to discuss defence and security following Russian threats to European airspace. There's been growing concern after a series of Russian incursions into EU airspace, including Danish airports. Now, following the summit, the 27 member states are now set to back a plan for what's called a drone wall to counter Russia. Speaking in Denmark, the president of the EU Commission, Ursula von der Leyen, spoke about the need for greater EU defence.
I want to express my solidarity with the member states whose airspace has been violated, Poland, Romania, Estonia, and of course, most recently, Denmark. These violations are part of hybrid war tactics, and these are threats that demand a strong and determined reaction and answer from Europe, because every European citizen and every square centimetre in Europe has to be safe. So we must provide the strongest of deterrents at scale and at speed. And that was the focus of our discussions today. There is a clear sense of urgency because preserving peace has always been a core task of the European Union.
But can the 27 EU countries work together as the threat of Russian aggression continues to loom over Europe? Well, earlier I spoke with Anand Menon, who's director of an organisation called The UK in a Changing Europe and professor of European politics and foreign affairs at King's College London. And I began by asking him, why would the EU not work as a defence organisation?
Well, I'm not saying that the EU doesn't have a role to play. I mean, when it comes to coordinating what we buy, how we spend, I think it has a really important role to play. What I'm saying is it's not an alternative to an institution like NATO. It's not a place where you can coordinate the deployment of military force. And the reason for that, paradoxically, is because it was designed for exactly the opposite purpose. If you go back to the end of the Second World War, the point of European integration was to tie big member states in and make it very difficult for them to sort of throw their weight around, to bully their smaller neighbours. And out of that came an institutional system that makes it very hard to suddenly say, let's repurpose this for deploying force. It just doesn't work that well.
So for countries like Ireland, which is not a member of NATO, what are we to do about our own defence?
Well, I think obviously, the European Union has a number of very useful purposes, one of which is that the member states can get together and talk together about defence. If it actually came to deploying military force, if it actually came to a situation where Europe's thought, you know what, we can't really trust the Americans, so we can't simply rely on NATO, then it becomes a lot more difficult. Then Europeans need to think, do we need to set up a new institution? Do we need to sort of figure out new ways of working together? Because, as I said, the EU won't really hack it. And if you can't really trust NATO, then you've got a bit of a problem.
Should Europe not be thinking ahead? I mean, NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, which spans the Atlantic, including Canada and the United States, as well as European countries, given the attitude of Donald Trump, and who knows whether that will be pursued by his successors, be they Republican or Democrat, should Europe not be thinking ahead and saying, what if?
Europe should absolutely be thinking ahead, but the problem is precisely that what if. So the Americans have made it clear for a long time now. I mean, you go back to President Obama's Secretary of Defense telling Europeans, you can't continue to be this dependent on us. This is a secular trend in American foreign policy. America is going to spend less time thinking about Europe, more time worrying about itself and about Asia. And so Europeans are going to have to do more for themselves. That's definitely the case. Whoever replaces Donald Trump, I think it's just a fallacy to think, well, if we get a Democrat, things will return to normal. I don't think they will. But what that future world looks like is not absolutely clear. So to take the obvious thing, are the Americans going to continue to be a reliable ally? So is it simply going to be the case that the Americans say, we're still your friend, we're just going to focus a bit less on Europe, in which case we can do lots of things like buying military equipment from them, continuing to coordinate with them? Or are we thinking about a future in which actually you can't rely on the Americans? A couple of European states recently, the Portuguese and the Norwegians, have made procurement decisions where they've refused to buy American kit. And the argument is, we can't really rely on the Americans anymore to be that reliable. So yes, we should plan ahead, but there's a slight difference between countries in terms of what that future looks like.
Mm-hmm. Now, the idea of buying equipment elsewhere than the United States, there might be a problem in terms of trying to coordinate the kind of weaponry that might be standard throughout NATO, American maybe in manufacture, maybe some of it is Swedish, I don't know, jet fighters or whatever. But the idea that if you don't buy American, you don't kind of fit in with the rest of the armed forces of NATO.
But yeah, I mean, interoperability is the word that they use to make sure that the different bits of kit work together. But there's already a problem with that, because one of the issues that Europe faces is not simply that we might not spend enough on defence, it's that we spend it very, very badly. Every country likes to use its defence spending to prop up domestic defence industries. And that often means that we're working at cross purposes and not, you know, the whole is not as much as the sum of the parts, if you see what I mean. And actually, one of the things that Europeans need to learn to do, and there the European Union has a role to play, is thinking together about what they need, thinking together about where best to procure it. And that might mean countries spending their defence money on someone else's defence industry, which of course is politically really difficult.
And of course, if you buy from the wrong supplier and then you fall out with them in some way, be they in Europe or across the Atlantic, the possibility of not getting spares for your fighter aircraft could loom large.
Yeah, I think the problem there is political, isn't it? And that's the issue with the United States is, you know, there's lots of discussion about the degree to which American kit has a so-called kill switch. Can the Americans turn off the software, not give you the updates, not give you the spares? In a world where the United States is not just not as close an ally, but not a reliable friend, that becomes a real issue. So that's something that a lot of European states are starting to ponder now when thinking about their future defense needs. Because, of course, these things take time. If you're thinking now about buying military stuff, you're talking about armed forces that will be ready in 10, 15 years' time. They've got long lead times, and it's really hard to predict that far ahead.
Could an attempt to mount some sort of integrated EU defence rather than a Europe defence coordinated by NATO, could that effort to create that defence be divisive? I'll give you an example where the Spanish Prime Minister, Pedro Sanchez, is saying, we're not worried about the Russians. They're not exactly going to march over the Pyrenees.
Of course it could be divisive. And it's divisive not just because member states have got different interests. I mean, Spain, of course, is in NATO, but because the EU was deliberately constructed to be a consensus-based organisation in which all states have a veto, all states carry the same weight. One of the reasons NATO works is you've got a hegemon. You've got the United States. And when push comes to shove, the US tends to get its way inside NATO. The EU doesn't work like that. So it will be hamstrung by divisions between member states, absolutely. And it's not just the case of the Spanish saying, Russia's a long way away, we're not that worried about them. It's also the case of governments in places like Hungary and Slovakia, where the ruling party is very close to Putin's Kremlin and try to get in the way even of the imposition of greater sanctions on them.
What do you understand as to that closeness to Putin? Is it a closeness born of fear or of friendship?
I think in the case of people like Orban, it's friendship. They're ideological soulmates. So at the moment, Viktor Orban, the Prime Minister of Hungary, is trying to slow down the accession of Ukraine to the European Union. These ideological divisions in Europe, and as well as the geographical divisions, make it very, very hard to reach consensus on foreign policy issues.
Now, I've asked this question many times, and I've never really got a satisfactory answer, because the Hungarians have been in charge of their own education system completely since the fall of the wall. How is it that the kids today who are now teenagers or in their 20s are not told about the tanks rolling into Budapest, are not told about the terrible hardships inflicted by Russia when Hungary was part of the Soviet Union?
Well, because you have a government with a whole different agenda, and the agenda of this government is anti-woke. They spend a lot of time trying to teach kids about the sort of dangers of homosexuality and things like that. It's a very the ideological agenda of the governing force in Hungary, and Viktor Orban's been in power for a long time now, is anti-liberal rather than anti-Russian or anti-communist. And I think that's where this comes from.
Is that likely to change? I mean, the winds of change may blow across Europe, most of them blowing to the right, it has to be said. But in the case of Orban, could the electoral winds of change blow him out of power?
I mean, they certainly could. There have been signs recently that the opposition has been getting stronger. You've had a couple of pretty close elections in Hungary recently. I wouldn't get too downcast about this, because if you look at countries like Spain, if you look at Scandinavia and the Nordic countries, it's not the case that all over Europe the populist right is triumphing. There are areas where social democrats are doing well. I mean, look at this country, the United Kingdom, where I am. You have a Labour government with a majority of 160 plus. So the picture isn't sort of uniformly the same, though in Hungary, of course, the far right have consolidated power. They've rolled back on democratic norms, making it harder to throw them out. And of course, one of the problems with Hungary is a lot of the sort of liberal people in Hungary have left the country.
And I suppose the final question is the war that's ongoing in Europe, and that is Russia's invasion of Ukraine. The war probably dragging on years longer than Putin certainly thought it would be, and the Ukrainians hoped it would be rather shorter than it's turning out to be. Do you understand America's walking away from Ukraine in such an emphatic fashion?
I mean, I understand why they're doing it, because Donald Trump isn't particularly interested. It might even be that Donald Trump wants to have a closer relationship with Vladimir Putin, because we know that Trump likes strong leaders. What I would suggest is it's probably not in the United States' long-term strategic interest to walk away, because, you know, as you started with the quote from the Danish Prime Minister, it doesn't look like Putin's appetite is going to be sated even after Ukraine. He's sort of messing with Europe's eastern borders by flying drones over NATO member states at the moment. And it would be a defeat for NATO, I think, if Russia succeeds in Ukraine, and that hence one for the United States as well.
And I'm an on director of UK in a Changing Europe and professor of European politics and foreign affairs at King's College London. Thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.